Well, we're back again. Episode 4. You're listening to Low, the show. Sweet 5 Production bringing to you live. And I'm telling you, we're so excited about what's going to happen today. It's going down to the Funky Sound, backed up by James Brown. I'm talking about y'all going to dance your feet today. I'm talking what they say, fast feet eat, slow feet sleep. Well, ain't nobody going to sleep today because this is going to be rocking and rolling today. And remember what I said, 2 ears, 1 mouth. Make sure you're listening because if you don't, you might just miss something. But hey, the motivation quote of the day, tough road often lead to worthwhile destination. And like they say, champions don't get there easy. Every champion have a story. And boy, we got a story to tell today. But that road wasn't easy. We know it was tough because no one just become a champion. They always ask this question, is champion born or is champion made? Well, we're going to find out today, was it born or was he made today? Because I have someone special. Now, I know for me, I'm a champion a lot of ways. I'm a champion in life. I'm a champion. I wake up in the morning. Can I tell myself I am the greatest? Everything I do is all about being the best. And I want you to do the same. Championship in football, championship in track. Guess what? It didn't happen by just jumping on the field or running on the track. It didn't happen. There's a process in being a champion. There's a journey that has to be from A to Z. So you can't just go to Z. You got to start with A. A. That was all about today. You know what? The man that's here today is with me. The man from a little town, a little city. I'm not even going to tell you where the city is, because you might say, wow, I never knew that. You never know where you find the little heroes at. You never know where you find the little boys from a little city that grow up to be a successful man. They grow up to be a champion, right? On the field, off the field, in the classroom, on TV, live, everywhere they go. Well, I have the one that made it possible, the one that made it, the one that I know personally, I know that this young man here did some great things. But I don't want to tell the story, because every champion have a story. And that story is going to happen right now with Mr. Maurice Allen. Maurice Allen. Now, I like, this ain't the one that I kind of like, I'm going to give you the bio, I'm going to break it down, I'm going to tell them everything about Maurice Allen, right? I'm just going to say 2 times world champion. Now we're at 3-time world champion.
Three-time
world champion.
Yes, sir.
Longest drive competition in golf.
Yes, sir.
Wow. That didn't happen overnight.
No,
you
no,
didn't sir. Become a 3-time world champion overnight. No, that sir. Was a process. Before we find out that process, Maurice, tell us a little bit about Maurice. Who is Maurice Allen? Where you from, right? And how you get to where you at now? Just a little, just give him a little bit before we dive into it.
All right, I'll give you 2 answers then.
Okay.
I am the prayers of the slaves that were beaten, raped, and murdered in the fields.
Mm.
And secondly, I'm just a kid from Pine Hills, Florida.
Pine Hills, Florida.
That's it.
A little Pine Hills.
Yeah. Little Pine Hills with a lot of talent.
But they say like a lot of people can't come from little towns like that and make it out and be successful and be a 3-time champion in a sport that not even given to them, a sport that not even for them, a sport they didn't even think of doing. How did that happen? I mean, where did that start from?
Oh, man, following God's path.
Mm.
That's it. It's simple. It's not hard.
Uh-huh.
It's easy.
Okay.
God's plan is greater than your vision. And if you understand and submit to his plan, you never know what can happen. There's a lot of distractions and deterrents along the way, a lot of obstacles along the way, and everybody has them. It doesn't matter where you're from. You can be from Pine Hills. You can be from Windermere. You can be from Boca. You can be from Beverly Hills. It doesn't matter. Everybody has what they see as distractions and deterrents off of their plan, off of their vision, off of their purpose. But it's all about truly submitting to what God's plan is.
Boy, I love that right there. And I just love how you make sure they know it. Nothing is possible without God. We already know that. But here's what's interesting. Like, when you talk about God, right, we talk about a plan that you have. I'm going to go back to the plan that we had. Yeah. Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
A different plan that we had, huh?
Different plan.
A different coach-player relationship.
Correct.
But I think what people make a big mistake in when they're talking about playing with coach to player relationship, because that was the segment episode 3 that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about fathers involved and a lot of things involved. But that plan don't happen without somebody special that made sure that this coach and relationship and player relationship was going to grow. That plan was mama.
I think where people mess up is everybody wants to be that one key component to an individual's success, and that's not how success really works.
Mm.
If you look at it, success is nothing more than a jigsaw puzzle, and it takes all pieces to come together for you to really realize what that puzzle is supposed to look like. Sometimes when you're putting the puzzle together, you don't care about the corner pieces and things like that because you can still see the image.
Right.
But your life is a big puzzle that has images all the way across it. So missing one of those vital pieces. And too many times people try to live vicariously through others. So it has to come through me, or I have to be the key point. And the truth of the matter is each one of those pieces of that puzzle are codependent on each other.
Right.
And if you can find a way to understand that part, which is why a lot of the relationships, the beefs, the button heads back and forth between sometimes coaches and athlete and parent and athlete, and even sometimes you come across bad people, and that's a part of it as well. But even those bad people are there to shape and mold you into the person that you're supposed to become.
Mm.
Our story started, obviously, long ago. I think I was 8, 9 years old, yes, probably, when we started. And I was at Robinswood, of all places, talking about track and field. We didn't think about golf. Golf wasn't a thing. But the work ethic, the dedication that was instilled in me by my parents, and then that was demanded on me by my coaches. I mean, how many times was it, you know, my mom didn't ever side with me when it came to the workouts. She never was like, oh, well, he just don't feel like it today. She didn't care. Oh, well, he didn't go to school today. Well, then he can't go to practice. You know, it was always those things that were really embodied by my parents in conjunction with my coaches. It was never a, well, you know, my son, you ain't going to talk to my son that way. You're not going to do my son that way. She was like, when he's under your care, you're supposed to follow the rules. And the rules are simple.
And I tell you, so it's funny you say that, because one of our moments was we're at the track and we grind.
Right.
We working out there.
Yeah.
And we running. I don't know if we running them sprints or we running some figure eights, but I clearly remember you cramping up.
Oh, yeah, I remember that day. We running them hills. Yeah. By the 60 star at Robinswood, up the little dirt hill.
And boy, you were cramping up. And I'm like, all right, let's be cool. Let's take a break. And she walked out there. What? Take a break?
Right. Yeah, she don't believe in breaks.
There ain't no break. You better get up and get it done. It wasn't none of that. It took a lot for her to say, okay, all right, maybe need to take a break. It took a lot. I don't know if she ever even said that. But how did that make you feel knowing that, you know, the coach is saying, hey, let's ease up a little bit, whatever. But the mom is saying, no, he got it. I can do this. No, what made her say that? Was it just she just knew that you had it in you, or she knew the level that you can go, or what was it? Because I know I'm a hard coach. I know when you had to run 4-400, 3-300, 2-200, 2-100, and might go back up the ladder, then come down here running, you know, and to be the best we can beat it, right, to start that journey to be a champion. But mama had a different mindset a little bit there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all boils back. It's all spiritual. I don't care who you are. And if you understand the spiritual journey that you have in life, if you understand, when you asked me, who am I? And I said I was the answer to the prayers that were beaten, raped, and murdered in the fields. You have to understand where that comes from. If you look back when our people were enslaved, those people knew that they were never, ever going to see a better day. They got up every morning. They went to bed every night praying to God and working and hoping and instilling into their kids something that they knew they'd never see. And so when I get out there and I go perform, I understand that I'm not performing just for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm understanding that I'm performing for something greater. You know, my grandmother was a maid. My grandfather was a janitor when they first started. And so understanding the hard work of those individuals, understanding the hard work of my mother, understanding the hard work of my father, and seeing that every day, day in, day out, people getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to work, putting in the grind, making sure they're getting off of work to come and take you to practice and fighting traffic and paying these bills and doing all this other stuff. And you think you're going to come out here and you're not going to give your full?
Right.
No, that's not how that works.
You know what's so interesting about what you said, right? Getting off work, get up 5 a.m, getting off work, picking you up, bringing you to practice. You know, I never, ever had to pick you up to come to practice.
No.
I never had to pick you up. Mm-hmm. I never had to take you home.
I never had to wait late.
To the track meet. I never had to wait late. None of that. I didn't have to do any of that. Mm-mm. Your mother, parents, they was right there every time. So that now, but then I'm always hearing these stories saying, I drove the kid home and there was 2-4 cars in the parking lot, driveway. Oh, I came to pick him up to go to the game and everybody was still in the house. That's mm-hmm. what we're hearing still to this very day. Now this back in when you was in middle school. Here it is, grown man, successful, right? A champion, and it's still going on today. Why is it like that?
I mean, at the end of the day, being a parent is not easy. I got 2 kids myself. It's not easy. It's a sacrifice. But you also understand that you have to be an individual who practices what you preach. See, a lot of people say, do as I say, not as I do. And that doesn't work. You know, you go to class, you go to camps, you go to practice, you see all these parents on the sideline and they're jawing at their kids about what they need to do and the effort they need to give. When my mom came to practice, she was either running, she was walking, she was working out. She was never just sitting there reading a book or just jaw-jacking on the phone, FaceTime, and playing the game. She was always active. So it was never a thing where even if I wanted to be that disrespectful kid who said, well, you ain't doing it. You know, I never had the ability to do that. I never saw that. I saw the discipline from the top to the bottom. Everybody right. in my family that I was close to, all the significant people who played a role in my life, all of them literally did exactly what they said they were going to do. So that was just instilled in me. And my parents knew. They were parents first. Obviously, they had to work, but we did things solely around their work schedule, their availability. They communicated. So even though they weren't together, my step-parents were really, really good as far as being there because they bought into a system as well. So it wasn't an issue where it was somebody else's job. It wasn't somebody else's responsibility to take care of me. And I knew that. I knew that everybody has a job to do. Their job's to go to work, pay the bills, put a roof over the head, food, mm-hmm. clothes, some of the things that I want, not all the things I want. And my job is to go perform, whether that be in the classroom or on the field. And right. every time I stepped up, it was time to get it done.
Exactly. So now we leave Robinwood, right? So we already have that instilled in us that we work hard, they work hard, you do your part, I do my part. We're a team. Mm-hmm. We're family. We're going to work together because we got a plan. Now we could have easily, with that type of family there and that type of support, easily you could have went to a private school. You could have went to Lake Highland Prep. You could have went to Bishop Moore.
No, we couldn't.
But, I mean, at the same time, though, it's always ways and avenues sometimes. Like, oh, we got a scholarship for you. We can go ahead and go there. But you went to Evans High School, right? Mm-hmm. Evans High School, right there. A person with all that support and love that you had. Get to Evans High School. That journey is itself. How were you able to continue doing what you're doing? You did track. Ran track at Evans.
Ran track, played football, played volleyball, played soccer, played baseball.
Five sports.
Yeah.
Five sports in high school, 5 sports. But we all were telling everybody just play football or just maybe run track too, you know, because that's been a big deal now, track and football. 5 sports, why 5 sports?
I mean, for me, volleyball was my first love. That's the first team I made in middle school. Secondly, track was probably my second love. Baseball was my third love. Football, I just wanted to get the girls, so that's where football came from.
We know you got that. We got 2 kids right now.
And then from there, soccer was something just to keep you in shape. But I think the bigger thing was by doing all those things, I stayed busy. And then I got to a point where I had to outgrow sports. So like I didn't play baseball after freshman year because I couldn't anymore because track and baseball were in the same season,
yes.
So football worked a little bit different my senior year, but – I was still able to do both of those sports at the same time. But I think the major thing was an idle mind is the devil's playground. I don't care who you are, a child, grown person. If you really don't have anything to do, if you're not committed, and especially in the underdeveloped mind, all kinds of distractions can get in the way. So it was never a thing where I was concerned about getting into trouble, going out, doing any of that, because I had games, I had grades. In my mom's house, if you didn't have over a 3.5, you couldn't play. Forget the 2.0 that they
buy.
Yeah, if you didn't have a 3.5.
What are you talking about? 3.5? Whoa. 3.5 GPA, you couldn't do nothing at 3.5. Here I am telling a kid 2.5 to order to be on a 7-on-7 team, 2.5 to play on my youth pot one of foot, my pot one of team, you had to have a 2.5 or you couldn't play in the game. And you talking about 3.5 back then, and you were able to play? Had there ever been a time where you didn't get that GPA and she really set you down?
Closest time my GPA was low, I think, was 7th grade. And that's when I realized, because she was like, you're on the cusp of not playing. And I think I was at a 3.33. I was under the established rules that were set. The rules were set. You knew what the rules were. At the beginning of the school year, you signed the contract. You had a discussion, contract negotiations. You had a plan. What are you going to go out for? What are you going to try to do? Okay, what classes are we going to take? So on and so forth. I mean, when I graduated from Evans, I honestly could have graduated my junior year, but they wouldn't let me take English 4 because I had more than enough credits. I went back my senior year. I just took college classes. Everything that they had that was dual enrollment that you could take, I took because there was nothing else left for me to do. I literally went back for one class. But it was one of those things where you set up a plan. Think about it. When I decided to come to this studio, I didn't know where it was. I knew I was coming here. I knew I was coming to talk to you. I knew all of that.
Right.
But before, as of yesterday, when you sent me the address, the first thing I did when I got the address was I put it in my maps. So then I know, number one, how long is it going to take me to get where I'm from to get here? Because I had to establish a plan for my day because I couldn't have you waiting on me. I couldn't have your guys who were here setting this thing up waiting on me. I couldn't have the people waiting on me. And so I understood the position that I was in at that particular moment. And the same thing happens with everything in life. If you sit down and make a plan and you understand what you're up against, it makes life so much easier. The majority of the things that happen bad to us, honestly, are our fault because we didn't think things forward. We weren't forward thinking enough. We weren't being proactive. We were constantly being reactive. And in a reactive state, anything can happen.
Right. So we in high school, right?
Yep.
And we're being proactive.
Yep.
Right? Right? We're not being reactive. We're being proactive in every way. Right? But we got all these sports we're running. We're doing all these different sports. You start narrowing them down. Right? Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, we knew that wasn't important. What was important was student athlete.
No. No.
Okay. Well, what was important?
Greatness. Nothing else.
Greatness of being a student and an athlete.
No.
Just being greatness.
Greatness. Everything you do, a great human being, a great athlete, a great student, a great son, all of that.
Greatness. You know, it's interesting, right? I walked into the studio and we're talking and I was doing one of my little quotes and I got ready to close it out. We're going live. All right. I'm going to close it out. And I had to close out with a different quote. And he said, you should have said the mindset of greatness, a commitment. No, I'm always saying that quote.
Right.
And everything I say, I always end it with the word greatness, you know, and it's interesting how you just tied it in. And once again, I think that still go back to the coach player relationship because we had that mindset of greatness. When we train, we got to be the greatest. We got to be the best. When we went to the track meet, we got to be the greatest. We got to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
We always. But it seemed like everyone was trying to do that so they can get out. You know, get out of where they was at and get somewhere else. What were you trying to do? Was you just trying to get out or were you just trying to, what were you trying to do, you know, with all the things that you were doing, all the different sports, 4.0 GPA, can't have less than 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
What were you trying to do? Because this is part of being a champion.
I mean, I wasn't trying to get out. There was nothing wrong and still is nothing wrong with Pine Hills to me. I love my people. I love black people. I think as black people, we're conditioned to hate ourselves. We're always taught that you have to look a certain way. You have to talk a certain way. Everything that we culturally do is wrong. And the only way that you can make it out is to change yourself from what is around you rather than uplift the people that are next to you.
Got it.
And so for me, it was never a thing of trying to get out. I was perfectly happy with being in Pine Hills. I'm still happy every time I go to my mama's house. I tried to buy a house in Pine Hills, but I just couldn't find one that I liked. So I got close, you know. Right. I got as close as I could. But I think the bigger thing about it is understanding and having a true passion and love for my people, for my area, and seeing the possibilities and the talent and the true blessings and gifts that are literally locked into those people in that area. And sometimes you have a giant that's sleeping. And I think that's what our community is. It's literally a sleeping giant. And at some point, we'll learn that we are a giant and we'll move. But until we decide to do that, it's going to be chaos like it is right now.
Wow, I see that, man. And I totally agree about the chaos. And you see how things are going, the direction we're going, what our youth kids are going. And we try to come back and give it, give back to them. And that's why we come on to Listen to Low Show, where we can, people can hear it, or where it come from, and let them, to give them a chance, right? And my biggest focus now is really is just leading to being that champion. So I'm in high school. I'm trying to lead up to it, right? Because it ain't just, you need to become a champion. You jump out the bed and I'll start hit the ball 400, well, hold on, I don't want to say the wrong word later, but 486 feet, I seen on YouTube. There was a process to get there. We're in high school.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you're going to get a track scholarship.
I did get one.
We jumping out the pit.
Yeah.
We jumping out the pit. You gliding in the air, yeah, like Michael Jordan going to dunk the ball from the free throw, top of the key.
Won national championships, did all that
national
stuff.
National champion. Yeah. I'm like, I'm saying to myself, ooh, I got me one. He, but this is it.
Yep.
Where did we go from high school? Where was that now?
You know, went to University of South Florida. Coach left, ended up with a coach that I didn't like, stopped playing, stopped running track, started playing football. Obviously, me and football don't work, but it's okay.
That was your fifth love.
It was more.
That was your fifth love. Now, don't try to bring it back.
But
now,
I'll say this. Okay. Football worked because I love the lights.
Right.
Remember, I used to love running in the track meets where the lights was on.
At nighttime.
And so anytime I can get under the lights, it's a whole nother ball game. I don't know what it does, but it definitely puts you in a different zone. And so football definitely gave me a greater opportunity for that. But, you know, transfer to Florida A&M, run track, on the All-American team, turn pro, Olympic trials. We're still running, you know. And then I end up tearing my hamstring in 2-3 different spots. And it makes it difficult to do anything at that point. And then we start finding our way back to baseball.
Go to
spring training with the Brewers, and it's all based off of speed. They're seeing speed. Speed gives me the opportunity. Then I had some stints with arena football, went back to football. And all these different things take place, and it was wonderful. But my senior year at Florida A&M, after I left and ran track professionally and then came back, so now we're in 2010, pick up a golf club. You know, I graduate from FAM. Honestly, it was a month. I think it was literally 4 weeks before I graduated from Florida A&M, where I double majored. So I was a biology and chemistry double major with a minor in math. Mm. And from there, I go and start playing golf. And you go off to chiropractic school and leave chiropractic school playing golf.
Yeah. Well, before we even get into the golf part of it, right, I need to go back because – for anyone that can be in college and don't get hurt in track, different coach chain. Wait, go play football.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to another school. I'm going to play. Wait. I'm going to go back to baseball. Isn't it true that doing multiple sports when you're young is better than just doing one sport? Because it looked like that worked for you, because when you got to college, you were able to try a different sport. And we don't know where that could have led. You could have messed around and got there in baseball and, like I say, stealing all the bases, you're fast, and that thing, no, you're in the major league. Or we could have been in football and got some kick return back and ran back for a touchdown. There you go. Now you're in Hall of Fame like Devin Hester.
Right.
Or we could have not got hurt in track or whatever and went to the Olympics and did great there. But by doing all them sports young allows you to do it as you got older. But they always now pegging kids do one sport. Before we get into the golf, I want to educate people on that and your thoughts on that.
I think what you end up with are repetitive injuries when you only stick with one sport. You change the sports IQ of a kid. You actually dummy them down. When you're playing different sports, you start to see parallels. You're starting to get them to think outside the box. You also get them in a different group of training because now, you know, back then you had your friends that were different seasons. You had your baseball friends, you had your football friends, you had your track friends or your family, as you call them. And you always had a dog in each one of those groups that you always worked hard to either beat or to keep them off you and whatever. You all always played back and forth with each other to bring the best out of each other. Well, what happens when you go in the same sport over and over and over again? Number one, you're not training your muscles in a different manner. They're still moving in the same way. Well, your mind's not expanding. I mean, you can get definitely elite coaching, and I'm not saying that that doesn't have its place. But when you're young, lifting weights really isn't a thing, which you wasn't into that for the longest with us.
No.
And so everybody's trying to throw you in the weight room, and that wasn't your thing. It was all about being an athlete. Well, the only way you really become an athlete is to play other sports. Playing the same thing over and over again doesn't make you an athlete. Mm-hmm. And so I've never subscribed to telling the kid you play baseball all year long, you play football all year long. No, I mean, if you took a football guy, had him play football during the season, and then during the winter they're playing soccer, then they're turning around and potentially running track or playing baseball, you've got them working all different types of things. And even if you're, for instance, if you're a receiver, look at Ocho. Ocho's probably the best example. His footwork really comes from soccer. His footwork doesn't come from football.
Right.
Because he was an actual footballer, not a footballer.
Baller, yeah.
So it's different. And so you
two different things.
Right. You can change a person's creativity. That's the thing that makes every great athlete great. That's what makes a champion a champion. It's not that they are that much better. It's just they learn and they know how to win. And you find ways to win in other sports than being just stumped in your one particular sport.
Okay. Well, I like that too. But I want to kind of be devil advocate on this right here.
Okay.
Okay, let's go be devil advocate. I played football. It only cost me $25 back in the day to play part one of football. I went to basketball, no problem. You know, it went all that AAU stuff like that. I paid $25 to do that. But back in my days, as we got more into your days and my son Lodum days, things kind of changed. Now, pay basketball, AAU, traveling costs a lot of money. Baseball, woo, a lot of money. Volleyball, trust me, I know, a lot of money. So, but I know there's local ways to do it too, but when you're an athlete, what happened is I'm dominating football. I go to baseball, played a little bit of inner baseball at YMCA, right? All of a sudden, I don't hit the ball, it's knocked across the gate, burn the curb, burn, baby, burn, boom. Everybody like, oh, wow, wow, he need to play AAU. Then I'm at a basketball, playing local basketball. I'm dropping three like they're hot. Oh, he need to go AAU. So now they pulling me, and I can't do it. I can't, parent can't pay for it. Parent can't afford it. Now I'm back to football. Got football now, $300 for the whole year. Go to the game, sit down, go back home. How do you able to do it?
I mean, my financial situation was different, and I understand that. So what I would tell people is this. Number one, in your particular area, everybody's always searching for this competitive edge. They're going everywhere and playing and going everywhere and playing. In today's world with social media, you ain't got to go nowhere. Do what you do where you're at, and they're going to come to you. That's honest. Do you have to play against the top players? Obviously, that's great because you get to see yourself in competition, and I agree with that. But the crazier thing to me is all the money that these parents spend for these kids to go play, travel this, travel that, travel this, travel that. And then my question to them is, well, why are you doing it? Oh, I want them to get a scholarship. Well, over the course of 8 years, you already spent the money for college already.
Whoa. Boy, you give me, boy, I just got a flashback just then, because that's so enough true.
Yeah. I mean, you spent $30,000, $40,000, $60,000, $80,000 over a course of 8 years, so you already paid for college. Now, if you're doing it for the enrichment of your child, the exposure, the experience, for them to travel, for them to see what's possible, for you all to bond, for you all to make memories, I will never, ever argue a parent for doing
priceless.
That. That part is a whole nother ballgame. I remember going to AAU Nationals with my mom, and it was always fun to give her the medal. And, you know, when I'd win in the long jump, I'd always take some of the sand because I saw Carl Lewis do it, and I had bags of sand from all places I won and all the other stuff, and it was kind of cool. And then we'd all go eat and all that stuff. That part was priceless. It wasn't about going to this meet so I could get a scholarship, because I knew I was going to get a scholarship. I wasn't worried about a scholarship. Academically, I was impeccable. Athletically, I was one of the best in the nation. So it was only a matter of time when people were going to come find me. It was just a matter of who. Mm-hmm. And was it the place that I wanted to go and the place that I felt that was great for me? But if you focus on the wrong things, a lot of times we're focusing on the finance and we're not focusing on the life that's in front of us. And the life that's in front of you is everything. The time that you have with your kids and growing and nurturing your kids and getting them ready for whatever is next in life, because you don't know when you're going to leave here and when you don't. So everything's not transactional.
Right. And I know I definitely agree with that. I was talking to one of the parents. And I said, man, no, volleyball is tough. It's a lot of money, a lot of travel, a lot of time. I said, I spent this X amount of money. I could already pay for college. I said, I don't advise nobody to play volleyball. Don't I'm telling him. I'm like, this is just too much. It's out of control. Somebody said, my daughter want to play volleyball. Go run track. I'm trying to steer him away from, you know, that ain't the sport for us. You know, that was tough, you know. And he looked at me and he said, Lo, your daughter played volleyball for 10 to 12 years before she went to college. She got a full scholarship. When you agree those 10 to 12 best years of you and her life together, and I looked at him and I was like, yeah, you're right. I mean, but it took some one-on-one to kind of like to tell me that, because like you said, it went about the money. You know, I'm thinking spending this money and I could afford it. If you can't afford it, you wouldn't do it anyway. But still, I'm thinking that way. But it's no cost on time with your kids. It's no cost on time.
On time with the people that you love in general. Not even just your kids, just anybody. And so if you're looking at the return on investment or whatever the case may be, everybody's in this world is really harping on money. Mm-hmm. And honestly, money is the most irrelevant thing out there. It's kind of like on the golf course, guys want to bet all the time. They're like, oh, man, I bet you $100. I bet you. I was like, I don't want none of that. I bet you 50 push-ups. I bet you 100 push-ups. Oh, man, I ain't doing that. Why you want to bet me that? Well, because I know you can go make more money. Hmm. I ain't worried about that. I want a little piece of your soul out here. I want to see you go, I want to hear that. That's what I want to hear. I want to own a little bit of your soul in my back pocket. Right, and that's what I'm looking for. Because money can be gotten, money can be lost, money can be stolen, it can be gained, it can be earned, all kinds of stuff with money. But at the end of the day, it don't matter because you're always going to be paying for something. Right. When have you ever seen the person that don't pay for nothing? I'll wait.
I was talking about, let's say it's free. Ain't nothing free.
Nope.
And I like what you said too. I go back to a return on investment. I hear it all the time in volleyball. Return on investment is starting to trickle down to football. It used to be where you play football, you do your thing, you go to high school, right? But now since football, to my opinion, turned into what we call money ball. But everybody want to return their investment. So I'm spending all this money for my kids to travel all over to play, not 6-year-old, 8-year-old to travel to Detroit, Indiana, Indianapolis, Atlanta to play a youth football game, right? At 6, 7, 8 years old. They doing it now. They're going to that route. And they like, I got to do it. I have to do it. I got to get a return on my investment. I got to work him. I got to train him. He got to get out there no matter what. And then they let the grades start, the slacking. And they're like, oh, forget that part. Them football, sport. Because they got to get a return on your investment. And I think we're missing the boat.
We're going to stop that.
Go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
First things first. Highest paid person in the NBA right now is who?
NBA?
Mm-hmm.
Jaylen Brown.
Okay. How much money does Jaylen Brown make, give or take?
300-some million.
Okay. What team does Jaylen Brown play for?
Boston.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Who write Jaylen Brown checks?
The NBA write the check.
No.
But the people who pay to get the tickets in the game? The sponsors?
No.
Pepsi? Somebody got a soda machine there and pay all the money?
No.
The television?
The owner.
The owner.
So let me ask you this question. Now, because he's an employee of the Boston Celtics. The owner is responsible for everybody on that payroll, every player, every medical staff, every coach, and you can go down the list of them, even to the people who changed the floor out. Do you think that this man is writing this person a bigger check than he gets every year?
No.
So then sports is not the way out, but education is.
Yes.
Jeff Bezos has more money than most people because of Amazon. And the thing that people are not understanding, why you out here chasing this sports career, I always tell every kid, do not go be an athlete. It is harder work than having a desk job. If you don't love it, if you don't love it, if you can't wake up every morning and go to sleep every night, and if you have not been on your field, or if you have not been training, if you have not lifted weight, and you don't feel complete unless you've done that, then you probably should go be an athlete. But if you're just trying to chase money, you want to buy your mama a house, you want to buy a Lambo, you want to do all this other stuff, go pay attention in that classroom. I promise you, you got a better chance of getting all that stuff. I'll give you the real numbers. I'm going to start with a simple one.
Go ahead.
Okay. How many people play in the NFL? Love this number.
Ooh, what? 4 to 6 player per team plus.
So you got a 53-man roster on each team.
What, 4 to 6 now?
46. Okay. How many teams?
What is now?
20, 27, 28?
32
teams. 32 teams. All right. 32 teams. So that's what? 500 and some odd people. 530.
Well, you know, I'm good at math, but you don't want to call it for a minor in math. Yeah. That was me.
So 2,000.
So we got 2,000 people. All right, watch this. Now, I take these 2,000 people. You going to tell everybody that they have a chance of getting to the NFL?
No. Okay.
No.
We're going to tell them that, yeah.
Okay. So let's go off that. Now. So now let's break it down, okay? If I'm 6'6", 270 pounds, well, I can guarantee you there's probably about, I don't know, 10 positions that I can't play. Minimum. More like 15. There's really only 8 positions I can play on each team. Multiply that by 32. If I'm 5'5", 5'8", 170 pounds, really ain't but 4 positions I can play on either side of the ball.
Right.
Combined.
Right.
For 32 teams.
Right.
Okay? So now these numbers get real small. Because based on your body type, and when you really look at it, there's only 4 positions. So 4 positions at 32 teams is how much? That's a very simple one. 4 times 30.
120.
Okay. So for each person's body type, and you do have a freak athlete that may get 8. So we'll bump freak. It up to the freaks that's out there that can get 8 positions.
Yeah, yeah.
So now you at 240. 240.
Mm-hmm.
Average lifespan of an NFL player is 3 years.
That's it.
Okay. Cool. Now watch this. This is where it's going to throw you off. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. How many companies in the Fortune 500?
500.
All them companies have a what at the top?
CEO.
So mathematically, it's 2 times easier for you to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company than it is to play in the NFL.
NFL's a dream. A college degree is reality.
But here's my thing. How many CEOs keep their job for more than 2 to 3 years? Now, see, here we go again.
Here we go again.
If we're looking at the numbers.
So that's why.
So we got all these kids out here basing themselves to be at an elite level where there's only 240 positions possible for them. Ain't nobody waking up saying, I'm going to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Now, mind you, outside the Fortune 500, these CEOs are making very good money. Very good money. But no one's having that thought process because we think that this is the only way out. The only reason why I sit in front of you the way I do now is because my brain power was better.
Yeah.
You know, my brother was a much better athlete than me. Jamar, we thought he was the one.
Right.
Till he broke his ankle. We thought he was the one. We knew it. We knew he was better. I know he was better. I don't doubt it. Yeah. I don't lie about it. Jamar was a much better athlete than me, hands down, all the way. My brother was so much better.
Right.
He got hurt, I didn't. What we seeing in front of me, my whole life that we see, that wasn't mine, that was his. That's what we all thought. We thought I was going to be good.
Right.
We thought I had a chance, right. But he was the superstar.
I remember when I brought you out there. He was there. I also said, this is little brother.
Yeah. He the one. Jamar is the one, not me.
Yeah.
Not me at all.
You know, I want to go back to something that you said that's very interesting too, right? And you brought it up. And we talk about the education side of it because about the Fortune 500, the CEO. the way football is going now and recruiting going, or sports periods, that might be the way, that's going to be the answer now. Because now it's all geared towards certain athletes now, the money side of it. And the athlete that would have went to D1 or big-time program, now they are now going to smaller program. 2 years ago, I had 7 boys that I just knew they're going to go at least to FAU or go to Virginia, who's not doing that good, but they're a great academic school, didn't go in there. But 2 of them went to Yale. I got 2 Princetons. We had Valparaiso. You might think it's a great educator, a great academic school. We had, so these guys went to Cornell. So Holy Cross, West Point, Navy. So they going to them schools there. They're playing football, but at the same time, they understand
the higher level education.
Right. So it's, I'm telling you, I feel like that's the way it goes. So that part about student athlete I brought up earlier, it's I know it went by greatness, but student athlete is losing to athlete student. It's losing because that's what they want to do. And you brought that up. But they need to keep that in place. And what's going to make it be in place is because of the money and what they're doing in sports now with the NIL and all that. So the kids will have to be smarter, man.
NIL. All right, here we go. So everybody looks at the $1 million and thinks it's a lot of money. Let's do the real. $1 million after you take the taxes at 33 leaves you what? 600.
Right. 33 or 38?
38. Well, let's just round it up. Well, actually, it depends on what state you're in.
Correct.
Because depending on your state and then what school, depends on how much they take too, because they can take as much as half.
Correct.
So let's just say we're at the school where they're going to take half. All right, cool. You got half. Gone. Now you're at 5. That's what's up. $100,000 a year ain't no money.
Nowadays, we know that.
You burn through 100 real quick. What are we really talking about? You're not talking about life-saving, life-changing, life-altering money. I mean, I saw a thing, I think it was yesterday or today. Kirk Cousins will have more career earnings money through contract than Tom Brady.
And he didn't win seven Super Bowls.
And he ain't won but one playoff game. You ain't talking about Super Bowls. I mean, he ain't won but one playoff game his whole career. You have to understand. But here's the kicker. Some people's purpose, God's vision for some people is unexplainable. So stop judging yourself based on what you see everybody else getting and being upset at what you not getting. When you get the opportunity, do with it what you're supposed to do. Do what you're led to do. Remember what you're there for and your purpose. And then everything else will be okay. Now, you don't know me how many years. I don't never talk about money to nobody.
Nobody.
I don't never ask for no money. I don't talk about money. I give a lot to my community because that's what I'm supposed to do. That's what God has ordained for me to do. I've probably given away over $500,000 worth of stuff in the sport where you don't make that money. There are no $1 million contracts in my sport, right. But that's not it. I also never worry about anything because of the way how I am obedient to God's plan.
Right.
So a lot of times we find ourselves looking at NIL. We think that NIL is going to be the savior. Truth be told to you, and this it sounds terrible, but let's be honest. Money does not fix problems. For some reason, as black people, we think that money fixes problems.
Might be paying your problems.
Best example I can ever give anybody is if money fixed problems, or Anthony Bourdain still be alive right here, right now. That's as real as it get. He had the easiest job in the world, or so we thought. Travel the world, eating food.
Yep.
On video.
Yep.
Put out a show. Eating food, kicking it, shooting it with people. Hey, what's up?
Yep.
Chilling.
Yeah.
Dead as a doorknob, though. Seriously. Yeah. Died by himself. Money solves absolutely nothing. Finding your purpose and following God's ordained light in your life is everything.
So speaking of purpose, you know, everyone have a purpose. You know your purpose. I mean, I know my purpose.
You know your purpose because you was mad when you got hurt.
Well, yeah.
You thought you were supposed to be there, but you have changed more lives and helped more people than you ever would have helped if you made it.
I agree.
There we go.
I agree.
Okay.
Because I was in high school. I mean, they asked me, what you want to be when you grow up? I said, I'm a businessman and a coach. But instead, I'm still trying to go football, playing football. I get hurt. Come home, businessman, coach. Know your purpose. You know your purpose.
I know my purpose.
But sometimes things have to happen for you to find that purpose sometime. Or you have to go through different journeys or different things. I want to get back now to Maurice Allen, the three-time world champion.
Okay.
Not football, not basketball, not track.
Wish that could have happened.
All right, yeah. But yeah, you wish that could have happened. Track. I wish it could have happened, too. And they were like, Lowood, train him, baby. Right? So how did you say you, after all the journey through college, all of a sudden, here come opportunity, you picked up a golf club. You picked it up. What make you pick up a golf club? I mean, was nowhere in no one category. I mean, no one.
It was in no one's category but my dad's. My dad tried to get me to play golf from the time I was 2-3 years old. And he always had clubs at the house. That's the only sport I ever seen the man play. And I used to go to the golf course with him, but it wasn't serious. I didn't play in tournaments. I didn't do any of that stuff. And it was a way for us to bond. And by the time I ended up going to Florida A&M senior year, somebody bet me I wasn't athletic enough to hit a golf ball. I was like, man, I ain't hit a golf ball, bro. And so we went to this thing, simulator inside, hit the ball, and he was looking at me crazy. And I was like, what? He's like, man, you need to go try this thing out. And I was like, don't worry about it. Went out. My cousins were on the golf course, and I told them about it, and they were like, man, this golf course is down the street. Let's go try it. So I ended up going to this competition for long drive. I was 50 yards past everybody, but the ball wasn't in bounds. And it was crazy because that's the first time I truly saw what greatness will do for you, because there was this lady who was there, and it was a country hick town. And big Southern draw. She was like, baby, I just want to see you hit that ball again. I'll pay your entry. I'll pay for you to hit.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Uh-oh. And so she paid the $40. I was like, all right, thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. And I still kept the ball out of bounds. And she looked back at me. She said, I don't know who you are, but you're something special. Mm. And so, but it's all about, from that moment on, going to chiropractic school. I was working on my doctorate. When you really look at life, if you take yourself out of it, and this is where a lot of people go wrong, because from the time you were a child, you've always been trying to get what you want. Mm-hmm. Think about it. You got a little baby. What the baby do? Scream, holler. Mm-hmm. And they've been conditioned, the more I scream and the more I holler, the easier it is for me to get what I want. Well, that same thing happens to you later on in life. So you get upset. You get pissed off. All these things happen. You mad. You stomping your feet. Rah, rah,
right.
And until you get what you want. Or you learn to lie and manipulate to get what you want, okay? Mm-hmm. But very rarely do you actually look at what's happening and why it's happening and understand that that is a part of the process. So my process didn't start when I actually got to chiropractic school. My process started 2 semesters before in the fall.
Right.
There's a girl I was talking to, and we had a guest speaker. You know, senior year guest speaker. I ain't going to class. So we sitting outside on the set at FAMU, and my cousins was like, hey, man, you know we got guest speaker? I was like, oh, y'all know we not going. We going over the state to hang out. The girl I was talking to was like, well, I put my books in there. I was like, that's your problem, not my problem. Right. We had just started talking, so you wasn't even my lady at that point. So you on your own.
Right.
True slime. I know, I can't help it.
Come on, man.
I'm honest about myself, right. Though. You know, ain't no use in lying about it. And she actually convinced me to go into the class. So I did the gentleman thing. I didn't leave her. So I went and I sat there. I was very reluctant about it. Understand that. I wasn't happy about being in there. Yeah. I was mad. And we sat in there, and there was this guy named Mac O'Harris gave a presentation on this chiropractic school called Life College. It's Life University. So we going through that, and he's asking questions, and I'm answering them because I had the personal training business and all this other stuff. And he came to me after presentation and said, Mr. Allen, can you please, I'll waive the application fee and everything, just fill out this application for me. My grandmother always said, you never miss an opportunity because you don't know what it is.
Correct.
So I filled out the app. They came back. They gave me a work study job, all this other stuff. I went up there to check out the school. And when I checked out the school, I had just started picking up long drive. And I met this guy, J.R. Ross, who was, 2 miles down the street from the school. talking to him. I said, hey, man, I'll be back up here. I'm moving on this day. I want to set up an appointment with you at this time. Now, this is 90 days out. Like most coaches, you hear people say that all the time.
Yeah. And don't show back up.
And you brush it off.
I still hear that right down the very day training. Yeah, we're going to be out there, coach. We're going to be out there, coach. Still waiting on them to come out there.
Right. And so, JR, I'll tell you, it was to the minute. I called him. I said, hey, man, I'm 5 minutes out. He was like, I thought you was full of it. Mm. I didn't really think he was going to show up for that appointment. So he and I started grinding, and I ended up meeting the athletic director playing rec league softball at the school. Guy named Coach Barrett. He was like, well, I was on the softball team. We started rapping, started talking. He heard he liked golf. He was into golf. He said, well, what do you think about you being the student athlete for the school in golf? I said, we ain't got no golf team. He said, we NIA. We can do whatever we want to do.
Mm.
So you NIA, what is that? I don't know what that is. Because I'm used to Division 1, 2, and 3.
You only hear this on Listen to Low.
I didn't even know what the NAIA school was. I'm dead serious. He was like, man, we make the rules. We do whatever. Because the regulations were so loose compared to NCAA, mm-hmm. right? And so what they started doing, brother, when I tell you, they sent me all around to these long drive competitions on the school dime.
Long drive in college.
Man, I was a one-man team. You know what I'm saying? I'm dead serious. I ain't no joke. And what ended up happening was there was this driving range on the opposite end. So JR's driving range was this way. There was another driving range that way. And what ended up happening was the driving range on the north side of the school, for $100 a year, you can go to the range and hit unlimited golf balls all day long. So someone stopped going to class. I didn't know that you had to physically go to grad school classes. I thought it was like undergrad. You show up when you show up. When it's time to take a test, you do your thing, you keep it moving. I ended up getting kicked out of school. This ain't no joke. I got kicked out of school, lack of attendance. I didn't know because I was at the driving range hitting 1,500, 1,000, 2,000 balls every day. Somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 balls. Every day hitting balls. Trying to get better because I was obsessed.
Right.
Remember, obsessed is a key word. And so... I get called to the president's office. President, say, hey, Maurice, I got to kick you out of school.
Uh-oh. Here you go.
You got to do what, man? He said, yeah, man, our accreditation, we can't have no flaws. We just got off suspension. You got to go, brother.
Mm.
And at that point, reality hit me because I'm sitting there like, how am I tell Sarah this? that's the first thing that pop up. And he was like, hey, and he kicked me out early in the morning. It was like 9 a.m. He's like, but I need you to come back at 3. And I need you to come with your full long drive schedule. I'm looking at him like, man, I come back here, I'm going to burn this place up. What you mean? Come back here with my long drive schedule. So right. I came back at 3 o'clock. Dr. Reekman wasn't even in the office. Because I'm walking by, and I see his car ain't there. So I'm pepper hot. You done kicked me out of school. Now, when you kick me out of school, I can't live in the dorm no more. My work-study job gone. I'm homeless. This ain't no job. I'm very serious about this. I'm homeless, brother. And then I'm walking by, and we got a meeting at 3 o'clock, and you got the audacity of not having your car here? So I'm a little early. I'm like, all right, maybe he's showing up. I walk in, and it's Secretary Danielle there. She says, hey, how you doing? You're Maurice, right? I said, yes, ma'am. I'm here for Dr. Reekman. Oh, he's not coming. What? Oh, well, did you bring the paperwork he asked? Yeah. Okay, come in here with me. So we go from her little office in the front to his big office. And we sitting in there just like you and I sitting. She go to the computer, pull out the little keyboard, go into a drawer, pull out this man black card. She purchased every flight, every hotel, pay for every entry, pay for every rental car that I had on that list of my events for the rest of the year.
Wow.
I went to Sweden twice. Wow. I went to Spain.
Wow.
I went to Cali.
Wow.
I went to Mexico.
Wow.
Competing.
Wow.
And then I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious, brother. I promise to God on this.
Hey, listen, trust me.
And then what tripped me out was he gave me a note. She said, and he left this for you. The note said, I know that you did not expect me to kick you out of school, but this is the only way I could keep my school the way it was. But I figured this is something I could do to help you along the way because I heard how good you are. And they paid for everything for the rest of the year.
Never know who's watching.
You never know who's watching. Now, here's the crazy thing. Now, this is the part that get people that they don't understand. So because, now we talked about setting a plan. like I used to do with my mom, right, and my dad at the beginning of every year. We set the plan. The plan was, Maurice, you're going to go to school. You're going to be here for 4 years. You're going to get your doctorate, and then you're going to move on.
Right.
There was no sports plan in that. Well, I deviated from the plan because I stopped going to class. Okay? So when I got kicked out of my dorm, I slept in my car for 3 months. I slept in Walmart parking lots. I slept in the parking garage at the school because these are places I felt safe. I threw my stuff wherever I could at people's place. A little bit of stuff in storage for what I could afford, and that was it. And I went from golf course to golf scramble, showering at golf courses, taking the lunches from the scramble, throwing them in my car because I didn't have no food, walking to practice when I was low on gas because I knew I didn't have any money coming in. My mom didn't know for 4 years that I was sleeping in my car. My stepdad kind of knew. Because he asked me about my registration. He said, hey, you got some mail at the house. Well, we got to send your registration because you got to send your registration. I said, oh, yeah, send it here. Why am I sending it to your cousin's house? Hey, man, yeah, that's just easier for me to get to it. What you doing? I'll tell y'all later. Serious. And that was a bigger part. And most people be really upset about that. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think that moment and understanding that I made an agreement with my parents. And did I have to be homeless? No. I could have came right back
here.
It was a choice. But the truth is, because I decided to go against the plan, it was for me to suffer the consequences, not for somebody to bail me out. Mm. And if I don't go through that, do I think I have the community impact? Do I think I have the impact on the sport? Do I think I have the people impact that I have today? Absolutely not.
Right. So once again, I go back to it. Every champion have the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts not when you jump out of the bed. It started from young all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that impact, everything that just kept going, that drive back to doing five sports, that drive to go from one school to another school, nothing stopped you, kept going. And also in the back of your head saying, I can't disappoint mama. I can't disappoint my parent. I can't disappoint. I got to keep on driving, keep on going. If I got to keep it a secret, I might tell a couple of lies, I'm okay, and really I'm not. But you knew that you still were going to be the greatest.
Yeah, I mean, my little brother and I always used to say one thing. You know, everybody says, go be great. And that was never our thing. We used to always tell each other, go be immortal.
Go be immortal.
Go be immortal.
Be immortal.
Immortality is the whole goal. Nothing else matters.
So you go be immortal. Now, we had a whole new journey, in a sense,
yep.
A whole new, right? We were going this way, and we didn't know which way we were going. Now someone gave us a new journey, new opportunity, and I lose touch. I don't know where you at.
Right.
No, Ellis and all us and Aaron Jones, remember Coach Aaron Jones?
Yep.
We like, where Maurice Allen at? And I'm jumping, I'm fast forward a little bit, right? Because all of a sudden,
I'm at four seasons
at a fundraiser. Running out a big fundraiser.
Yep.
At four seasons. I'm walking through. I got my friend Josh Allen from Pylon. He invites me out. And I come out there, don't know nothing about golf. I tried it one time and this says I'm out of birdie. I'm looking for birds. I hit the ball, hurt my knee. A ball went over to somebody's house. I said, this is terrible sport. Who would do this?
Yep.
Get me out of here. But what I did like was the food cart that came around. And I made sure I ate every time they came out. Hey, give me that burger, give me that sandwich. So the best day for me for golf was the food cart, baby. It was so good. And the girl that would drive was beautiful. I'm just saying. They know how to get you. They know how to make you spend that money.
Right.
But I get out there. I'm sitting down. I'm in VIP section too. I feel like, oh, man, I see all the people with suits and ties. Everything's going good. Mm-hmm. And everybody walking a different
step. LPGA event. Tournament of Champions.
I'm there.
Yeah.
And they hitting the ball. I'm going. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's good. Everybody clapping. And it was a lot of big-time guys there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaving out, and I'm walking. And I look. I'm like, Maurice?
Yep.
And I'm just in awe. Shocked. Now here I'm seeing, I'm going to say it at this now, little black boy from Pine Hills.
100%.
Grown man out there, stand up in golf gear on, playing golf. Are you a teacher somebody or what was going on?
No, yeah, we just finished our round and I was helping. Actually, I was helping Ray Allen.
Ray Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I seen. I'm like doing some golf. And I said, wow. And then you looked at me and what was, I'm now back to the coach player relationship. I'm like, hey, what's up? Hit me up or something. And you're like, what? You run over there. And I'm trying to give you a dab. Like, what? Yep. Give me a hug. Right? Phone number, everything. We reconnect. And I learned the story and the journey. I get home. Stop following on social media. All of a sudden, the Ric Flair video come on.
Oh, man.
This you don't won the longest drive competition, two-time, three-time world, this your second time world champion. You're right there. You just won it. You know, this little black boy from Apopka, from Pine Hill. I'm going to say it again now. Right? I'm a little black boy from Apopka. You know, you from Pine Hill, right? I had a business at Pine Hill. We tied all together. I'm right there. I'm watching. And you win it.
Yeah.
The microphone in your face. You did something that no one could ever done around here. No one even thought about doing. A whole different sport, a whole different journey, a whole different purpose in life. You get there, you win it, and they step in there, put it in your face, and you didn't say, I'm going to Disney World. You said the Ric Flair.
Yeah, it happens.
Anthem.
Yeah, it happens.
And it goes viral.
100%. Still 100% going.
Still viral. Yeah. More views than Ric Flair himself.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, but I'm just saying.
I don't know about that. It's close, though.
It was close.
It's one of those things, man. You know, with us, it's funny because people ask me all the time about that, and they thought that I had it planned, and I didn't. I mean, you've been around me long enough to know that whatever comes to the top of my head going to come off.
You're going
to
come off quick.
It's witty. Sometimes it goes. And, I mean, I know they always had an interview. And I remember after winning that particular round, going into the next round, the guy who I was going up against, he was tough, really good competitor. But I had to hype myself up. I had to do something. And I just told the guy who was interviewing me, I was like, man, just ask me how it feels.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he told me they were going off in his little IFB in his ear, and people were running out with cameras trying to get it because they were like, man, we don't know what this dude going to do, but we know it's going to be gold.
Right.
And, I mean, it was cool. You know, I think that goes and shows people the power of black culture, honestly, because – a lot of white folks have done it. You know, you saw the Indianapolis Colts, they did it, and it was a part of their breakdown. Obviously, we've always done it as a part of the breakdown from back before XL even came. It was just five of us out there training. That was one of the things. But it shows how we make things cool, how we change things. And I think if I had been a white dude who did that in golf, it wouldn't have caught viral like that. But being me, only black dude on the tour at that time, and winning and being the first major champion that the tour had ever had, I think it was just one of those things that set the bar and it set the standard. And, I mean, it went to a whole nother level. I think that thing ended up with almost 40 million views, 50 million views, something just absolutely sick. But the most important thing to me about that day is it was my dad's birthday. You know, I had the opportunity of living pretty much a dream. You know, I won back-to-back years on my dad and on my mom's birthday. And a lot of people can't say that they know that their parents are proud. You know, everybody speculates or, you know, sometimes you think about the grinding and the work that your parents do for you to have the opportunities that you have. And you can never, ever pay them back. And for me, that was as close as I think I could ever do to pay them back was to win on their birthday separately. And that for me, honestly, is the two of the biggest. They're definitely in my top five moments in my career, 100%.
Right. Well, listen, guys, you heard it there. You heard it best right here. You're on episode 4. You are listening to Low Sweet Fried Production present Listen to Low Show. And we had on the 3-time world champion, long drive competitor in golf, little black boy from a Pine Hill, Maurice Allen. Gave you all the information you can get, all the knowledge you can get, all the nuggets you can get, all the motivation you can get, not just to you as a parent, but as a person, as a father, as a husband, as a wife, as a mother, as a friend, as a teacher or anything. You can take this with you and understand that your purpose in life is possible. Your journey is not over. Your journey can go far as you want it to go, as long as you listen to Low. And you heard on the Listen Low show. And once again, I'm Low Wood, a.k.a. the Camp King. You listen to me right now on episode 4. Episode 5 is going to be even better than this. I'm telling you, every week, we want you to subscribe and like at Camp King with a K. K for kids on YouTube. Follow us, listen to us. Two ears, one mouth. Remember, tough road often leads to worthwhile destination. And that's what I mean by every champion have a story. And you heard a great one today.